You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Happy Monday to you. The voter purge, it's interesting, we're getting different reports. Huffington Post and several other media outlets are reporting that Rick Scott has said to the Department of Justice, we know we're violating the Voter Rights Act. The state has been under court order for a decade, you know, or more. We're within 90 days of an election, quack, quack, quack. But we're going to ignore you. The state of Florida is now denying that. They're saying that they're going to issue a formal response by June 6th. In the meantime, 300,000 people have been pulled off the rolls since 2008 in Colorado, and a huge voter purge is on its way in Texas right at this moment. This is happening in states all over the United States. Dan Gaynor is with us. He's the Vice President and T. Boone Pickens Free Market Fellow with the Business and Media Institute. Businessandmedia.org is the website. Dan, welcome back to the program.
It's a pleasure. So, Tom, how do you want to handle this today? Do you want us to yell and scream at each other, or do you want to discuss like a nice middle ground rational solution that one of your guests, when I was on TV, he and I were kind of having this conversation in the green room one time.
Okay.
A gentleman from the NAACP.
What would that solution be, Dan?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, you and I found common ground on voting once before. We really did. Left and right found it when we talked about black box voting, something we're frankly both equally suspicious of. I didn't like the way the media had hyped it to one side, and then when their side won, they gave it a whitewash.
Right.
You and I agreed on that.
Yep.
So here, I think as American citizens, we want everybody who's legally allowed to vote to be able to vote, but we don't want anybody who's not legally allowed to vote to be able to vote. Can we agree on that much?
Yeah, although, let me put a caveat on here. There is no problem with people who are illegal in the United States voting. Nobody so far has demonstrated. Nobody has demonstrated that they are so stupid that knowing that they are in this country illegally, they go into a polling place and say, "Yes, sign me up to commit a federal felony or a state felony." If there was such a person, their name would be as famous as Willie Horton. There are no illegal voters. There's Mitt Romney committing voting fraud and people like that, but no.
We have
no illegal immigrants
under arrest or been arrested in Virginia for voting fraud. We have study of Michigan came up with estimated 1,500 voters who
give me one name.
I don't have the names, and I can go pull them for you.
Well, that's the thing. You don't have one name, Dan. You might have one guy in Virginia. How many people get hit by lightning in this country every year?
No idea.
Okay, it's about 600.
But they're not being.
There are more people who get hit by lightning every year than who vote while not being a citizen every decade.
Actually, you have no idea, and neither do I. I happen to live in Maryland, so trust me, I have absolutely no faith in the voting process. I watched how magical voters and, you know, election fraud settled my governor's race in the 90s. We could go back into the 1960 election when Richard Nixon decided not to fight, what had happened in Texas and Chicago.
Actually, they did investigate Chicago, and they found that there was fairly minimal voting fraud. Nixon, however, had actually, Nixon had committed election fraud. That's in Lamar Waldron's new book about the Nixon administration and Watergate in the 1960 election.
A little bit pregnant.
But it wasn't voter fraud. It was election fraud. This,
yep.
and this is my concern. Dan, we already have laws on the books that are quite draconian that put people in jail for voting when they're not eligible to vote. And most of the people who get busted for this, when George W. Bush spent $74 million in 8 years searching for one person who was illegally voting and had 93 of his federal prosecutors looking at this and fired seven of them because they didn't want to do this. They wanted to actually, look for people who are committing real crimes. He was unsuccessful in finding one person in 8 years. $74 million effort.
In Maryland, I recently went to see the movie The Avengers. Very good movie, by the way. And I voted in the Maryland primary. I was asked for more ID to see the movie The Avengers, and I was asked for the Maryland primary.
Doesn't
That's
matter.
Ridiculous.
It's how much ID were you? I went to see The Avengers, and I was not asked for any ID, by the way. Yeah. What, do you look like you're under 18? Is that the deal?
We should reasonably know that everyone is voting as who they are.
Well, I don't, you know, in principle, I don't disagree with that, Dan, but here is the problem.
Here's your side of the argument that I agree with, which will surprise you, because that was what the gentleman from the NAACP and I were discussing. But I want everybody who's legally allowed to vote. So then let's set up Motor Voter, not run by individual organizations, but run by the state. So, okay, you're gonna purge people who are suspicious, and you're gonna try very hard to get anybody who is not.
But if you're doing Motor Voter, Dan, I can't vote. I don't own a car. I mean, when my driver's license expires this year, I'm half inclined not to renew it.
Maryland covers, reaches out to people who are not just that. I would like to reach out to all people who are legal, legal citizens to be able to vote. But I don't want anybody showing up and not being asked for an ID who can vote under anybody else's name. It's ridiculous. We ask for more ID than that in every other aspect of our life.
Dan, maybe you're not familiar with this, but back in 1980, during the Reagan campaign, one of his chief strategists, a guy by the name of Paul Weyrich, came out and just, you know, he was in, as you know, as I'm sure you well know, Paul Weyrich was in charge of Ronald Reagan's direct mail operation, and brilliantly so. I mean, this guy's a very, very good political operative. He worked on every Republican campaign from Reagan all the way through George W. Bush. He passed away last year. And here's Paul Weyrich in 1980, in the summer of 1980, speaking to a group of Republican activists in a church. Here, just listen to this. This is where he laid out the strategy that we see played out right now by the Koch brothers and their American Legislative Exchange Council. Paul Weyrich.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
So there you go, Dan.
So what? I mean, you're quoting somebody from 32 years ago who's not even alive.
Who chartered the Republican policy on this.
And you're playing Mad Libs with your commentary, just throwing in Alec and the Koch brothers just for the fun of it.
Alec is who authored the laws that are in over 20 states to make it harder for people to vote. This is the Republican strategy is prevent people from voting, Dan. Why don't you repudiate it?
The idea is to prevent people who are not supposed to vote under someone else's name.
No, it's not. It's to prevent people from voting who might vote Democratic. You and I both know that, Dan.
When voting for the NAACP, and I can sit in a room and sit down and agree that both sides have points here, why can't you and I? I mean, you know, he was on.
Dan, I will stipulate I only want people to vote who are legal citizens. We already have accomplished that. You need to stipulate that you want everybody to.
In some states, it's laughable, the process that 20-some states go through, including my own. You know, there's no monitoring of it whatsoever.
Who in their right mind would register to vote who's not legal?
I think a fair number of people.
Who? You got one guy in Maryland. What was his crime, by the way? Was he an ex-felon or was he an illegal immigrant?
First of all, you've got ex-felons, and you've got 12 to 20 million people who are here illegally.
And these people are living in fear of ICE, and you think that they're going to show up and say, hi, sign me up?
If you use Social Security numbers illegally, why shouldn't they be able to do this illegally?
Well, because you don't go to the government to get an illegal Social Security number, but you do go to the government to vote. I just don't see it.
Like I said, Tom, this is one that left and right can solve rationally and said you choose it as a way to score cheap.
I would hope so, Dan.
Play Mad Libs with the
I would hope we can solve this rationally. Businessandmedia.org. Dan Gaynor. Thank you, Dan.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So we'll see. The voter purge has already in Colorado, 300,000. Texas rolling along. What do we do about this? Exposing the con and conservative. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Chuck in Seattle, listening on AM 1090. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Well, I was just listening to Dan Gaynor talking, and he brought up the Michigan thing. It was brought up last night on Ed Schultz's show. They Googled it. They found 7 questionable voters. None of them were fraudulent. It was things like they'd made a mistake, or perhaps there was an ex-felon that thought he could vote and couldn't, but there was 7.
Right, and by questionable, or it could be somebody who just simply had changed their address or voted in the wrong district when they shouldn't have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that seems to be their thing right now, but 7 is not a huge number when we're talking about millions.
Right, and that's still not one illegal immigrant who is voting. I mean, it's like I keep saying, give me the name. I know when they get one name, it's going to be that name, you know, it's going to be Ernesto Gonzalez, and everybody in the country is, it's going to be, you know, if they can find a Hispanic name that has illegally voted, these guys will have their Willie Horton, and they will use it, you know, from one end of this country. But I don't think that there's one out there. I'm telling you, I have, you know, some personal experience with this in my own family of, you know, one of my nieces marrying somebody who was not a U.S. citizen and him getting deported. I mean, it's just, it's like these folks are not going to show up and say, hi, here I am. I mean, there's a net negative flow of people from the United States, or, you know, there's a positive flow of people from the United States to Mexico right now, the reverse of what it used to be, because of ICE enforcement. And the last thing that somebody who is in this country illegally is going to do is say, oh, yeah, I think I'll vote in an election. Come on, give me a break. Half of Americans who are eligible to vote don't vote in elections. Why would illegals do it? It makes no sense. Chuck, thank you for the call. It's absolutely excellent point. Amy in Chicago, listen to WCPT. Hey, Amy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's nice talking to you. I've been a longtime listener, and this is the first time I've felt compelled to call. But in light of your last guest talking about the need for ID and doing motor voter,
yeah.
I've always done motor voter. Everywhere I've lived, I've registered when I've changed my driver's license to whatever state I'm living in. This is my 5th state since I've turned 18. But each time I've gone to vote, I've had to sign a register, and the person working at the polling place, you know, matched my signature to what they've had on file.
Right.
Now, I don't know how many people, you know, would fake their signature to vote illegally, but
I had forgotten about that. You do have they do check your signature against the file, don't they?
Yeah, I've lived in Ohio. That's where I'm originally from. I'm in Cook County right now, outside of Chicago, where the county issues us IDs to take to the polling place because it lists our precincts. And so forth,
right.
And yeah, has my address, my name, you know, my identification that I didn't have to pay for.
Right.
And again, you know, I've lived in New Mexico, where you would think there would be a bigger issue with possible illegal immigrants voting.
Right.
And all I had to do was sign the register when I showed up to the poll.
Yep. Because. This is a tempest in a teapot. It's full-blown, full-on hysteria caused by the Republicans because they are playing out an election strategy. And thank you very much, Amy, for sharing your story with us. They're playing out an election strategy that was laid out by Paul Weyrich back in 1980, just like the Reagan administration and Republicans to this day are playing out a very clear strategy laid out by Jude Winiski back in 1976. In 1976, Jude Winiski said, his two Santa Claus theory, and he wrote it up as a memo for the Republicans, later published a small version of it in the Wall Street Journal, several articles written about it. I think his name is Ed Stone, the former head of the Cato Institute, talked about how Newt Gingrich thought he died and went to heaven when he read this thing. And what Jude Winiski said was, when a Republican is in office, spend like a drunken sailor, run the debt up as high and as hard as you can, and when a Democrat is in the White House, scream as loudly as you can about the national debt. And that will force the Democrats to stop putting forward Santa Clauses like Social Security and unemployment benefits because there won't be any more money, and it'll force them to shoot Santa Claus as Bill Clinton did when he ended welfare as we know it. And Republicans, meanwhile, get to be Santa Claus because they take all this money and spend it like crazy. Jim, in Washington, Michigan, do I have that right, Jim?
Yes, you do.
I grew up in Michigan. I didn't know there's a city named Washington. Where is it?
Well, it's north of Shelby Township and south of Romeo.
Oh, okay, I know where that is. Anyhow, what's up?
Yeah. Well, you know, went to vote a short time ago and took out my voter ID card that they send me. And they said, no, that's not good enough. We need your driver's license.
Really?
And my question is, well, why do they bother to spend all the money to send out all these voter ID cards?
Well, because... Because
me like I just got off the spaceship.
Yeah, well, it's because the voter ID cards were being issued under old Michigan state law that preceded the new Michigan state law, presumably. I don't know this for a fact, but I'm assuming Michigan is one of the 20-some-odd states where the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, the Koch brothers organization, and by the way, the guy who founded ALEC is Paul Weyrich. Paul Weyrich, the guy you just heard saying, I don't want everybody to vote, he was the founder of the American Legislative Exchange Council. And they wrote these laws that have been put into place in over 20 states around the country, which make it harder and harder for you to vote. You've got to show more and more ID. Now you've got to show up, you know, with not just your passport, that's not enough, not just your driver's license, that's not enough. You also have to bring utility bills and some others, you know, all this kind of stuff. And all of this came out of the American Legislative Exchange Council, and that's probably why Michigan is now telling you, you know, give me a driver's license as well as the voter ID card that Michigan gave you when you registered to vote. So, Jim, I hope that makes some sense out of it. Thanks for the call. I think it was particularly ironic that Dan Gaynor started laughing when I said, you know, ALEC bringing you these laws, and he's like, what does that have to do with it? Well, Paul Weyrich founded ALEC. Back in the 1970s or 1980s, Paul Weyrich started that organization. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And if you're just tuning in, I will play that Paul Weyrich clip for you one more time right after we come back, and then we'll pick up your calls. Welcome back. Okay, just very quickly, if you just tuned in, we had a debate with Dan Gaynor from the Business and Media Institute, conservative think tank, and about these voter purges that are happening in states all over the country and these laws that have come out of the American Legislative Exchange Council that have been passed in more than 20 states, making it harder for people who don't have driver's licenses, who are students, who are elderly, who can't get out of their house, making it harder, who are disabled, making it very, very hard for those people to even register to vote, much less vote. And in the course of that debate, I mentioned that these laws were coming out of the American Legislative Exchange Council, and Dan started laughing. And in fact, it's a shame we don't have a Wayback Machine. We can't just play that clip, although Dan's not here to defend himself, I don't do that kind of thing anyway. But he thought that was humorous. I'm guessing that's because Dan didn't know, and I'll have to be sure and tell him next time I see him, that the founder of the American Legislative Exchange Council, the organization that has pushed these laws in more than 20 states now that make it harder for you to vote, the founder of that organization is a man by the name of Paul Weyrich. And here's what Paul Weyrich had to say to a group of Republican activists when he was helping run the Reagan campaign for president in 1980. Here's what he had to say to a group of Republican activists meeting in a church back in the summer of 1980.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Welcome back. And so there you go. This is Paul Weyrich laying out the strategy. Perfectly clear, perfectly obvious. I don't want everybody to vote. In fact, frankly, our leverage goes up in an election as the voting populace goes down. And the Republicans have thrown, I mean, you know, we saw it before the 2000 election down in Florida. Jeb Bush had Katherine Harris clean the voting rolls list. 70,000 African Americans suddenly couldn't vote. And George Bush won by 536 votes. And, oh, by the way, when they did the recount, when the New York Times and all these other, this media consortium, New York Times, USA Today, Washington Post, AP, when they did the recount, they discovered that by any measure, if every vote in the state of Florida had been counted, Al Gore won the presidency. Now, if they had only counted the three counties where Al Gore had originally sued, Broward, Dade, and another one, Miami or something, or whatever it is, then Gore still would have lost. But if they counted every vote in the state, which is what the state Supreme Court ordered, and what the U.S. Supreme Court put a stop to, because in Bush v. Gore they said that having the vote be counted, as the state Supreme Court in Florida required in 2000, having that vote be recounted would have caused, and I quote from Bush v. Gore, irreparable harm to complainant George W. Bush, end of quote. So now you know the strategy. Now you know what's going on. It's really quite remarkable. Sandra in Minneapolis. Hey, Sandra, thanks for listening to AM 950. What's up?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Like you said, my name is Sandra, and I am 30 years old, and I came to this country as an undocumented kid, and I just wanted to speak and have the power of claiming our own struggles that we undocumented individuals who come here to search for a better life, we do not vote. We cannot vote. We know it. And if we ever dare to vote, our immigration cases will be thrown away.
Yeah.
That's a felony. And we are very aware of it. And the fact that all this right-wing organizations are using it to even divide and conquer, now that even citizens' rights are being in jeopardy, is outrageous. And I hope that the general public can understand that this is just another tactic to divide and feel as sympathetic for our causes that at the end of the day are human rights. So I just wanted to share that with the public.
Very, very well said. Thank you, Sandra, for calling and for sharing your story with us. I appreciate it.
And
I wish you the very best. Thank you. This is remarkable. Jim in Long Island, New York, listening to WWRL. Hi, Jim. What's up?
Hi, Jim. Tom, I have personal experiences in three school districts that are in economically depressed neighborhoods. One of the bigger issues in these districts is that collecting money from parents from the school lunch program. The school lunch program put parents into three different categories. Those that qualify for a free lunch, those that qualify to pay partially for their lunch, and those that pay full price. One of the issues is that people that are in this country illegally are very reluctant to fill out any forms to qualify their children for a free lunch. Therefore, if they're reluctant to do that, why should they turn around and vote illegally?
Right. Yeah, you're making my point, and the point that the person who is in this country undocumented who just called and made, which is, you know, what do you think I'm crazy? I'm gonna, you know, and you're right. If they're afraid to sign up for a free lunch program, they're going to be very afraid to sign up to vote. And because signing up for a free lunch program is probably not a felony, signing up to vote is. And it's amazing, Jim. Thank you very much for sharing your story. I much appreciated it. Barbara in Seattle. Hey, Barbara. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi. I've got a suggestion that we all protest by re-registering to vote and getting other people, asking them when we see our friends, have you re-registered, as a way of protest?
Well, here's the thing. It may not be protest, Barbara. I mean, you know, in Colorado, they knocked 300,000 people off the voting rolls. Those people don't know, by and large, that they've been knocked off the voting rolls. The 70,000 African-Americans in Florida that Jeb Bush knocked off the polls to give that state to his brother in 2000. They had no idea. Many of those people stood in line for 6, 8, 10, 12 hours to vote back in November of 2000. And then when they got there, they were told, sorry, your name's not on the list. So, I get your point and the humor
of
it.
That's why we should re-register now.
You should double check your registration, if nothing else, and make sure that it's still there. Thank you very much, Barbara. I appreciate it. Yvonne in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Yvonne. Thank you for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hello. Good afternoon. Yes, this is in reference to that gentleman that was talking about Binet or something, that was talking about how illiterate he is about at least Florida voting rules.
Right.
I can tell you, I am Hispanic, but I became a USA citizen in 1974. I left the country for 20 years, and when I came back, I registered to vote for the first time.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've been here in Tampa since 1990. Now, it says very clear you have to vote in the county where you reside, number
right.
one.
Right.
You have to bring a valid photo and signature identification, because when you fill out a long form, you have to tell them your social, everything about who you are from the day you were born.
Right.
So that signature is registered in the system. When you go and sign in, all right,
right,
then they check out to make sure that this is you. Also, if you don't bring a photo on or the signature ID, you have to vote as a provisional ballot. So that goes separate. They don't put you in the system.
Right, and those aren't even counted until after the election, and they're
right.
only counted
right.
if there's a tight election.
That's how Bush and those people got away with
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Okay, also, if you want to, if you have an issue or a problem with your signature, they ask you to go there. To there's so many voting polls here in Florida. Here in Tampa, in every corner, we have a voting registration.
Right.
Okay, so you tell that person that it is not possible for anybody, regardless of who you are, to go in and say, oh, I'm going to register to vote, and then you don't have the papers to show who you are.
Yeah.
So tell them that.
Okay, you got
Florida
it.
Florida has become a punching bag here. First it started with Bush when he took away the election. Now we have here in Florida gerrymandering.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And, gerrymandering too. Yeah, that's the, you know, following the census, you always have that. Yvonne, thank you very much for the call, and thank you for your absolutely to-the-point comments. And Chris in Denver. Hey, Chris, thanks for listening to AM 760. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom? So I'm actually originally from Oregon. I'm from Portland area. And as you know, former resident, we vote by mail. So the polling stations and issue. Thinking, you know, if they have, I think, the other, like, 44 states that have a postal absentee ballot program, if Democrats got, like, a big initiative, you know, to get together and, you know, encourage this, I mean, with postal costs and things like that, maybe the legislature might, you know, reconsider.
One of the things that Florida has done, though, is they have shortened the amount of time when you can send in an absentee ballot, and they've shortened early voting. I mean, they're doing everything they can to reduce the number of people who vote. That's what it comes down to. It's very simple. Ultimately, what all of these Republicans want is they want voting to only be on a Tuesday, on a day of the week when working people find it hard to get time off to go vote. And you know, they don't want there to be voting on the weekends. In fact, I believe that Florida, I might be mixing my states up, but I know that at least a small number of states, and Florida, I believe, is one of them, used to have early voting that extended over the weekend. They've knocked one of those 2 days off, either Saturday or Sunday, so now it's down to 1 day over the weekend. And it's all about Paul Weyrich's strategy. Chris, thanks so much for the call. But, I mean, Paul Weyrich laid this thing out. It's not a secret. The founder of the American Legislative Exchange Council, the founder of ALEC, which is the author, ALEC is the author of all these Make It Hard to Vote laws. The founder, Paul Weyrich, came right out and said it. I don't want everybody to vote.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And you can visit TomHartman.com and hang out in our live chat room. I'm going to get back in there during the next break and say hi. Stick around. Welcome back to the True People's Media, talk media for the rest of us, the Tom Hartman Program. Lawrence in Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Lawrence, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Yes, pleasure to talk with you. I want to ask you a question. I know everything right now is basically targeted Democrats, which I am. What do you think about the percentage of Republicans that will be affected by this legislation if it passes, or how much devastation will it cause on them?
Well, the assumption that these guys are operating under is that the vast majority of Republican voters, certainly the Republican base voters, are the people who will reliably turn out for the Republicans, are by and large white, by and large middle or upper class, and by and large own cars and therefore already have ID. And, you know, for them, doing the whole song and dance is a minimal problem. And that the people who live in urban environments, people who are poor, people who are disabled, people who are elderly, who are all more likely to vote Democratic, that those people will be harmed by not being able to vote. So, if there's voter fraud, well, what exactly was your question?
What percentage of Republicans would be impacted by this, you think?
Very, very few. Very few.
Okay.
And that's why when the Miami Herald did their study and they just, you know, they contacted a whole bunch of people who had been who had gotten these "you are about to be thrown off the list" letters from Governor Rick Scott down there in Florida. And what they found was that the vast majority of these people were had Hispanic surnames. That, you know, first they purged African Americans in 2000. Now they're purging Hispanics because the Hispanics are increasingly wanting to vote with Obama and vote with Democrats. And so the Republicans are just hysterical. You know, as America is increasingly, I mean, this is the first year now where babies being born, more than 50% of them are not Caucasian. And so the Republican Party is like, as long as they try to continue to position themselves as the party of scared white men, they're going to, you know, demographics are just flowing against them. And so they're trying to hang on to power. I mean, this is not unlike the old South in the 1850s. And I think it's grim and scary. Make sense, Lawrence?
Yes, it does.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you. David in Cook County, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to point out that in the heart of the Democratic machine, they do require a government ID if you vote early in Cook County.
Mm-hmm.
So driver's license, passport, whatever. But I also wanted to point out that there's an alderman by the name of Joe Moore who is very progressive on a lot of issues, but he has this program called participatory budgeting, and he says that anybody, even if they're an illegal alien, can come in and weigh in on how to spend $1 million in his ward, and he was very explicit about this. So maybe illegal aliens.
I remember that, David, and you know, the one guy in a low-level functionary in state government making a comment that was either stupid or taken out of context apparently is still a Republican talking point, right? Because they're still calling in and saying, so yeah, go for it. Oh, this is actually, we'll come back to that. I thought you said you had a clip about that guy. Jim in Las Vegas. Hey, Jim, thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. What's up?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I hope everything works out with your wife.
Thank you.
Real quickly, though, logistically, to try and vote twice, I'm going to have to go to different precincts because they're going to kind of recognize me the second or third time.
Right.
So just logistically to get from to do that, you know, it's just insane. You're going to need an army of people to do that. You see
I
what
know.
I'm saying?
I know. They're trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist, and they're not really trying to solve the problem. They're using the excuse of trying to solve a problem that doesn't really exist, when in fact what they're trying to do is reduce the voting populace. I mean, it's just that simple. Jim in St. Joseph, Michigan. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to kind of relay a situation that's happened here in Michigan in the 11th Congressional District. I don't know if you're familiar with Representative Thaddeus McCotter.
Yes. The Republican.
Hello?
Yes, I'm familiar with him.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, there you are.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Are you familiar with Thaddeus McCotter, a congressman from the 11th District in Michigan?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I don't know if you've heard the latest, but he is a five-term congressman in a district that he personally gerrymandered 10 years ago and was just gerrymandered again to make it more Republican. And he will no longer be in the House of Representatives because he is accused of fraud, gathering the petitions he needed. He needed 1,000 signatures to be on the ballot, and they found out that the signatures were duplicated, whiteout, copied.
Right.
And I think it's kind of ironic that a right-wing teabagger is now not going to be in Congress because of fraud.
Yeah. Well, and one of the problems there, and I don't know the details of Republican Congressman Thaddeus McConner's problem, shall we say, regarding this, but we have seen this movie before in numerous places around the country. There are organizations, there are companies, little mom-and-pop businesses, some of them are actually fairly large, that go out and get ballot signatures, that get, you know, to get initiatives on, things like that, We saw this when I was living in Oregon, which is a state where you can get something on the, you can even amend the Constitution by ballot initiative. There were several of them, including one to make it so that if the state wanted to raise taxes on rich people, they had to have a two-thirds majority in the Congress, you know, in the House and Senate, in the state House and Senate, which passed, by the way. And in many of these cases, what happened was people would show up with a clipboard and they would say, hey, you want to sign up a ballot to legalize pot? And, you know, if somebody looks like they might be a person who might want to legalize pot, and the person signs it, and what you discover later is that they just signed a petition to put somebody on the ballot or to put a ballot initiative on to rebate money left over, this so-called kicker in Oregon or whatever. I mean, voter fraud, because they're being paid to do it. So it becomes an apolitical, amoral act because it's just, you know, they're being paid. It's now some states and some places have, as a result of this, outlawed paying people by the signature, but you can still pay people by the hour. And you know, frankly, I think every state all across the country, we should make it illegal for people to be paid to gather signatures. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, sometimes you wonder if it's like, is this like the voice of God, or is it astrology, or in today's Financial Times, this is an amazing story. By the way, if you're in Wisconsin, tomorrow's the big day. Give the local Democratic Party or whomever, I mean, show up. You know, they need people to help get folks out to vote tomorrow, too. But anyhow, back to the Chinese stock market. This is absolutely fascinating. Today, June 4th, 2011, or is it 2012? This is 2012, isn't it? Today, June 4th, 2012, is the 23rd anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. Okay, 23rd anniversary. So the stock market opened in China today. Now, in the United States, first of all, let me set this up. In the United States, the way that we do dates is month, day, year, right? June 4th, 2012. In Europe and most of the rest of the world, the way that they do dates is day, month, year. It's 4 June 2012. So today would be 4-6-12 in pretty much every country in the world except the United States, where we reverse that and we say 6-4. Okay, just I hope you're not confused by that, but there's a reason why I want to share this with you. The stock market in the Shanghai Composite, the stock market in China opened today at 2,346.98 points. Okay. 2-3, today is the 23rd anniversary of the Tiananmen Square killings, which happened on June 4th, 1998, which rendered in European, or I'm assuming Chinese numbers, would be 4, the date, 6, the month, 98. So it's the 23rd anniversary, 2-3. Of 4-6-98, and the stock market opened at 2,346.98. Tell me that's not like the voice of God, okay? Now, on top of that, it opened at that rate, and then it fell 64.89 points. Now, in China, instead of saying June 4th, 6-4, instead of saying June 4th, 1989, which can get you put in jail, people say 64. They simply refer to it as 64. 64.89. And the stock market in China today fell 64.89 points. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, this is on the front page of today's Financial Times. It's really quite remarkable. I am hopeful that the day will come when the Chinese will government will, you know, look at what happened and say, you know, we shouldn't have done that. That was wrong. And maybe investigate it, issue an apology. It's not that the United States has a tremendous perch from which to lecture the Chinese. I mean, we still have not done reparations for slavery or for the rape and pillaging and murder of Native Americans. But still, it would be a nice idea if both countries owned up to their past. You know, ever since FDR famously won the office of the presidency four times in a row, the Republican strategy against Democrats has been pretty simple and can be summed up in one word: sabotage. When there's a Democrat in the White House, simply and purely, do everything you can to sabotage his efforts to do anything that will make him look good or help the American people. During Harry Truman's first term, the election of 46, the Republicans took the House and Senate for the first time since the Great Depression and immediately set out to sabotage Truman, just like they're doing with Obama now. They passed the Taft-Hartley Act to create right to work for less states. They sabotaged his friends in the labor movement, something that's still working for them today. Truman tried to veto it, but they overrode his veto. Then Truman proposed expanding the New Deal with what he called the Fair Deal. It was a national single-payer health care system, along with putting into law the concept the government could be the employer of last resort. Everybody has a right to a job. Republicans blocked it, every aspect of Truman's Fair Deal. And it hurt him badly in the polls. So in the final months before the election, he called them the Do-Nothing Congress. He called them out for blocking his initiatives. Here is Harry Truman. Okay, this is just a piece of it.
That made the Taft-Hartley Law are allowed to remain in power, and if these elements are further encouraged by the election of a Republican president, you men of labor can expect to be hit by a steady barrage of body blows. And if you stay at home, as you did in 1946, and keep these reactionaries in power, you'll deserve every blow you get.
Okay, by exposing the Republican sabotage strategy, Truman got reelected in a squeaker. The next big Democratic incumbent running for election was Lyndon Johnson's vice president, Hubert Humphrey, in 68. Vietnam War, incredibly unpopular. And in the spring and summer of 68, LBJ had actually negotiated a preliminary peace deal between the North and South Vietnamese that would have ended the war that year, which would have been great for Hubert Humphrey. Final meeting was to be in Paris, where the agreement would be signed, and by ending that war, practically ensured that Humphrey was going to become president. So Richard Nixon had his operatives reach out to the South Vietnamese and tell them that, hey, you guys just don't go to that peace meeting, refuse to sign the deal. We'll give you a better deal, and we'll make you all rich. The CIA intercepted the conversations between Nixon's campaign staff in New Mexico and the Vietnamese, and they gave the tapes to LBJ, who was furious. This was treason. But he was afraid that if he went public with the fact that Nixon was committing treason to win the presidency, it would so disillusion the American people it would stain the presidency forever. So he called the Republican Senate leader, Everett Dirksen, and asked him to let Nixon know that LBJ was on to what he was up to, what Nixon was up to, and that he should stop it.
Here's the latest information we got. The agent says that they just talked to the boss in New Mexico. Uh-huh. And that he says that you must hold out. Just hold on until after the election. We know what Chu is saying to them out there.
Yeah.
We're pretty well informed on both ends. Now, I'm reading their hand, Everett. I don't want to get this in the campaign.
That's right.
And they oughtn't to be doing this. This is treason.
I know.
This is treason, he says to the head Republican in the United States Senate, Everett Dirksen, after whom the Dirksen Senate office building is named. And Everett Dirksen says, I know. Those tapes, by the way, were just released last year. For almost 45 years, this had been a secret, that Richard Nixon committed treason in 1968 to win the election. And Nixon knew that LBJ would not go public with what he knew, so he refused to stop his interference. South Vietnamese blew up the peace talks. Humphrey lost the election to Nixon. Republican sabotage of a Democratic presidential candidate worked. The next Democrat running for re-election was Jimmy Carter. The Shah of Iran had been our guy, and his entire military and police force was using U.S.-made planes, tanks, and weapons. So when the Shah was dying of cancer and fell, and the nation was taken over by radical Islamists, They badly needed spare parts and munitions that were compatible with U.S.-made weapons and planes. Barbara Honegger, who worked in the Reagan White House, wrote a book called October Surprise, outlining how Reagan's campaign manager, Bill Casey, reached out to the Iranians and told them that if they'd hold the U.S. hostages that they'd taken until after the election of 1980 so that Reagan could win the election, then Reagan would sell them the spare parts and weapons that Carter had embargoed. Historian David Brinkley tells how Carter learned of this after he'd lost the election and Bill Casey had been elevated to the head of the CIA. Carter was in a meeting with Yasser Arafat in 1996 in Gaza City as part of an effort to broker peace with the PLO during the Clinton administration. And Arafat said, "There's something I want to tell you. You should know that in 1980, the Republicans approached me with an arms deal for the PLO if I could arrange to keep the hostages in Iran until after the U.S. presidential election." I'll tell you the rest of the story right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So how are the Republicans planning on sabotaging this president? I got two more sabotage stories to tell you, and then we'll ask that question. Okay, so first the Republicans tried to stop Harry Truman by denying him every program that he wanted, his fair deal, his national health care program, all those things. The Do Nothing Congress of 1946 or 1947-48, elected in 46, which only lasted 2 years, by the way. They threw the Republicans out of the House of Representatives, and they didn't take it again for over 40 years. But in any case, Harry Truman, they tried to deny him the presidency by refusing to pass any of the legislation he asked for. He campaigned on that, and he beat them. Then they went after Hubert Humphrey and Lyndon Johnson, the Johnson administration, and Nixon cut a secret deal with the Vietnamese to extend the war past 1968. And that has not come in. You know, we didn't know about that until last year, although Lyndon Johnson knew about it when it happened. Then Jimmy Carter. You know, the hostages were taken, and the Reagan administration was negotiating, or the Reagan campaign was negotiating with the Iranians. And Carter gets told about this. Stop, Paul. Thank you. Carter was told about this, and he, you know, by Yasser Arafat of the PLO, and he actually held up his hand with a stop motion when Yasser Arafat told him this. Like, you know, I don't want to know about this. Carter was absolutely horrified. But like Lyndon Johnson, he was unwilling to dig deeper or go public with anything that would tarnish the office of the presidency. And so when Congress investigated the sale of weapons to Iran by the Reagan-Bush administration, the legislation authorizing that investigation, and this, you know, was during the Bush administration, that authorized that investigation very specifically and explicitly blocked any inquiry into whether the deal was made before the election. Nobody wanted to tarnish the presidency. So Republican sabotage almost worked with Truman and did work with LBJ and Humphrey and Carter. Next up was Bill Clinton. Republicans took control of the House in the midterm elections of 1994, 2 years into Clinton's presidency. The new Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, reprised the Republican strategy against Truman and put it on steroids. Not only would they block Clinton's effort, they'd shut down the damn government, totally humiliate him. But Clinton, like Truman, went public with the whole thing and called them out, accusing them of a craven political activity that was harming the American people. Here it is.
The government is partially shutting down because Congress has failed to pass the straightforward legislation necessary to keep the government running without imposing sharp hikes in Medicare premiums and deep cuts in education and the environment.
And here's another here's another one of Bill Clinton calling the Republicans out on this.
It is particularly unfortunate that the Republican Congress has brought us to this juncture. Unfortunately, Republican leaders in Washington have put ideology ahead of common sense and shared values.
And the third one.
Remember, the Republicans are following a very explicit strategy announced last April by Speaker Gingrich, to use the threat of a government shutdown to force America to accept their cuts in Medicare and Medicaid, to accept their cuts in education and technology and the environment. Yesterday, they sent me legislation that said, we will only keep the government going and we will only let it pay its debts if and only if We accept their cuts in Medicare, their cuts in education, their cuts in the environment, and their repeal of 25 years of bipartisan commitments to protect the environment and public health. On behalf of the American people, I said no.
And did the video clip end with "I said no"? Okay. The result was that Clinton won re-election, and Gingrich was disgraced and eventually resigned from Congress. Now Barack Obama is the Democrat faced with the same Republican sabotage strategy. Not only have they blocked any efforts by Obama to revive the economy or bring jobs back from overseas, but Republican-leaning transnational corporations are sitting on $2 to $3 trillion here in the U.S. and even more overseas, refusing to spend any of it until after the elections. Every meaningful piece of job creation legislation to come out of Nancy Pelosi's House of Representatives during Obama's first 2 years was blocked by a filibuster in the Senate. And since the Republicans took the House in the 2010 midterm elections, they've refused to pass any legislation that would create jobs or bring jobs back home from overseas. And in the meantime, they've demanded and gotten a reduction in the length of time people can get unemployment benefits from 99 down to 73 weeks, meaning that 500,000 people are in the process of being thrown off the unemployment rolls right now as we speak. Same time, Republicans and state governments all over the country have laid off over 600,000 people. Now, keep in mind, during Reagan's administration, they were hiring people like crazy. George Bush's administration, hiring people like crazy. But in the state, the governments of the Republicans have laid off 600,000 people, making things in red states even worse than the national average, devastating millions of American families. And tragically, unlike Truman and Clinton, the Obama administration has not yet done a good job of making it clear to the American people that this is a Republican sabotage strategy. Instead, in a bizarre reversal, Republicans are bragging about the success of their efforts to crash the economy. You know, if President Obama doesn't start channeling his inner Harry Truman, we should all get ready for President Romney and the super hard right-wing Supreme Court that a President Romney will bring us. This would be an absolute, unmitigated disaster for the United States. And we all need to be making it clear that when the Republicans are out there talking, whether it's on TV with their talking points, on radio with their talking points, in print with their talking points, in their campaign ads, Karl Rove is running these ads all over the country. By the way, Karl Rove was the top political guy in the Bush administration. The Bush administration is running the campaign against Obama. I mean, Rove, it got $100 million. The Bush administration is campaigning against Obama? Really? Whenever they're trashing the economy, they're bragging about their own accomplishments. That's what they're doing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And it's really high time that the Democrats started pointing that out, that these Republicans are bragging, constantly bragging about their accomplishments in blocking any economic progress. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, the question in my mind is just, Harry Truman called them the do-nothing Congress. Bill Clinton actually shut down the government. He vetoed the Republican budget. The Republicans said, okay, we'll give you a balanced budget, cut Medicare. And Bill Clinton said, no, not going to do it. And he vetoed the government. And then he said, and by the way, you know, we're going to do, we will balance the budget, but we're going to do it the right way, not the wrong way. We're going to raise taxes on rich people by 3%. And we're going to fully fund these necessary programs for the American middle class and working class. We're not going to cut Medicare. I mean, he just laid it right out. And the people loved him for it. I mean, they were like, yeah, great. So Will Obama do that? Is he going to campaign against Congress? Will he campaign against a do-nothing Congress? Time will tell. Or will the Republican strategy attempt? Will the Republicans destroying the economy and then bragging about it, keeping the hostages, bragging about it, extending the war, bragging about it? Will the Republicans harming this country and then blaming it on the Democratic president while they're bragging about the work that they themselves did, is that going to work again this year? I don't know, but I think it's an interesting question to ask. Larry in Denver. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hey, not much. How's it going, Tom?
Fine, fine. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to thank you, first of all, for letting us know. I didn't know anyway about the Colorado, what they're doing out here with the voter thing.
That was back in 2008.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a done deal. That was done 4 years ago. And they knocked 300,000 people off the rolls in Colorado in 2008, and which we were yelling and screaming about on this radio show at the time. Now in Texas, they just knocked another 300,000 people off the rolls. That was just reported today over at the thinkprogress.org blog. So what I'm saying is this is happening all over the country.
Yeah, nothing surprises me what these Republicans will do.
Yep.
It really doesn't. Anyway, my point or my suggestion for the voter problem in Florida is, I don't know if you remember the Fox show, not Fox News, but Fox Network, the Moment of Truth, where they hooked people up to polygraph machines, and they were forced to tell the truth, basically.
I guess
it was like a game show.
Right. Anyway, I never saw it.
I was thinking. Okay, I was thinking, why don't we do that with Rick Scott and hook him up on a national level, you know?
Here's the one problem.
It's not a court.
Here's the problem. Shane, I just got it. Here's the problem with hooking up Rick Scott or any other Republican, high-profile Republican who wants to, basically destroy the lives of working people in order to make rich people richer. Hooking them up to a polygraph test. There is one group of people who can always beat a polygraph. You know who that is?
Who's that?
Sociopaths. People who have no conscience. The polygraph measures your stress when you're telling a lie. And if sociopaths have no conscience about telling lies, if you don't think that telling a lie is wrong, you think it's just a fine thing, it's not going to show up as a lie on a polygraph test.
Ah, okay, well. So, it was just a suggestion, but I figured, give it a shot.
It's a great idea.
Make them sweat a little bit.
unfortunately, with this crop, it wouldn't work. But thank you, Larry, for the call. I appreciate it. Mike in Charleston, South Carolina. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Enjoy your show, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Thank you for listening to Sirius. What's on your mind?
The question I have for you is, I've heard on your show a number of times that you said that voter fraud is very rare.
Yes, sir.
And my question, I guess, would be, are you talking about attempted voter fraud or voter fraud?
I'm talking about either one. I mean,
I guess my question would be, if voter fraud is successful, would we know?
I think so. When Acorn was registering people to vote, they turned hundreds of names over the years over to the authorities saying that we believe that this person who registered to vote was not who they said they were. And, we were required by law to have them write, to take down their information. But we don't think that it's valid and you need to double check it. And they found some people, who mostly ex-felons. But, both of them, I think, are very, very rare. Is there a point there, Mike?
Well, the point, yes. I mean, the point is this. I don't think we know what voter fraud is. I think we know that attempted voter fraud, based on your statistics, would be rare, because presumably when an attempted voter fraud is identified, those votes don't count, correct?
Well, no. There's been so little of this that it's not a matter of counting or not counting the votes. Thanks for the call, Mike. Election fraud, however, is happening on a huge scale all across the country. That we know. So, okay. Dan in San Luis Obispo, you say it's in the Constitution that you have the right to vote? Article 1, Section 2?
I believe so.
in Article 1, Section 2, in the third paragraph, my constitution, the first couple of sentences there are in parentheses because it was modified by the 14th Amendment, Section 2. So if you go to the 14th Amendment, Section 2, sentence or paragraph 2, it says that the right to vote in an election, and the one in Article 1, it was the preface to how they were going to do the census.
Right.
How they could conduct the census. And so if you go to the second paragraph of the 14th Amendment, it says right there, you have the right to vote. It does say, of course, mail.
Right.
You know,
but when the right to vote at any election for the choice of electors for president or vice president of the United States, representatives in Congress, and the executive judicial officers, or the members of the legislature thereof is denied to any of the male inhabitants of such states being 21 years of age and citizens of the United States are in any way abridged except for participating in a rebellion or other crime, the basis of representation therein shall be reduced in the proportion which the number of such male citizens shall bear to the whole number of male citizens 21 years of age in such state. So, no, what this says is that when your right to vote is eliminated, then the state loses members of Congress. And so what Section 2 of the 14th Amendment is basically saying is that if an individual state, now keep in mind, this was all Reconstruction. This was post-Civil War. So what they were saying is, okay, North Carolina, if you're going to have literacy tests and poll taxes and other things to prevent African Americans from voting, and you're going to claim in the census that you've got a million African Americans in your state, which would give the state enough people that you get another member of Congress, but you're not going to let them vote, then you're not going to be able to claim that member of Congress or send that member of Congress to the House of Representatives. That's what they're saying.
But just by stating the right to vote in an election,
because they're not enumerating it as a right. They're saying if they're as an inalienable right. They're saying if the right to vote is taken away, then that person's representative isn't counted as that person's representative.
Right.
So,
well,
and
let
this
me just
is
tell you a quick caveat because I appreciate it, and I appreciate that you're smarter than me. That's why I have a lot of your books and. You made me get a constitution, which I'm looking at.
Yeah,
but
good.
I didn't buy a personal little book.
Uh-huh.
I printed it out from the internet.
Uh-huh.
And like an idiot, I was using just a black cartridge of ink. There's all kinds of little links that has, you know, blue with the underline.
Right.
That you can click on due process, jurisdiction, apportion, blah, blah, blah. It goes on forever.
And you
made me have to read the constitution because I had to fill it in by hand.
Well, good on you, Dan. Reading the Constitution is a good thing, you know?
It really is. I was wrong on this one. I was just trying to find a way out of this.
Yeah. I can tell you, if there was a right to vote in there, the Supreme Court, you can't, nowhere in there does it say corporations are people, and the Supreme Court found that somehow in there. Unfortunately, you didn't find the magic bullet, Dan. I appreciate the call, though. Thank you very much. Dee in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Dee, we have a minute to the break. What's up?
Yes, Tom. I was just thinking about them undermining Obama the same as they've done Truman.
Yep.
But what you have to understand is so much more intense the way that they're coming after Obama. And whether you want to admit it or not, the two greatest causes that they're coming at Obama with are racism and greed.
You're absolutely right.
And I know that nobody wants to hear the racism issue, but that is really what's torn the country apart.
No, they
and,
never.
And we find that the majority of white people in this country, no matter, they are struggling. They're trying to pull up. A whole lot of people are. But that is so deeply ingrained in them until I think even God can't get it out. And it's really bad because it's tearing the country apart.
Yes.
When you look at what they are doing to people over in Florida and over with Scott Walker over there in Wisconsin and just denigrating people and throwing them away, and we know that what they're doing wrong.
Yes.
We know that the Supreme Court is basically at least 50% racist, but we sit and we try to go through the Constitution and find this
And when they want something that's not in the Constitution...
Dee, you are absolutely right. I'm sorry we're out of time, but thank you very much for the call. You said it very well. And you're right. Harry Truman, nobody ever questioned his citizenship.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And the reason there was no kerfuffle about Harry Truman's birth certificate? Harry Truman, everybody knew, was white. Welcome back to the program where despair is not an option. The Tom Hartman Program. Our Talk Radio News Service report is brought to you by the German Embassy, which wants you to know that Germany supports the European strategy to strengthen the euro through fiscal stability, solidarity, and growth. You can learn more online at germany.info. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Might this have to do with Ms. Espinosa's run, Ellen?
Yeah, it certainly does. We're out campaigning for her. And, in fact, it's interesting, Tom, because tomorrow's a major election day in several states with several interesting things, but only about 1,000 people have pre-voted in this area, in the districts, Taos County, Santa Fe, etc. And that means people really need to get out to vote. I mean, people
wow.
need to vote. These elections are important. Of course, we want Valerie Espinosa to win, but in addition, people need to vote. Now, speaking of voting, today was pretty interesting, and that has to do with the Florida voter purge. The Justice Department gave Florida till Wednesday to stop purging the voters from the rolls.
Right.
And the Secretary of State says they are going to continue. Well, the Miami newspaper said that out of the 385 in the Miami-Dade area that they purged our citizens, only 10 were not.
Wait a minute.
So
only
they,
it's so they
be a showdown. In other words, they purged all these voters. 385 were actually citizens,
and
only 10 were not.
And 10 were not. I'm surprised the 10 people who were not citizens were registered to vote.
Well, of course, but
why?
Maybe,
why are those people not in jail, and why are their names not being plastered across national media? I'll bet that if you read very carefully, you'll discover, like we did in Michigan when they were yelling about these 7 people that they caught who were not legal voters, that
it was the same name or similar names.
Well, no. It's that the people in Michigan who were, quote, not legal voters were like, you know, they were registered in one voting precinct, but they were where they lived. They should have voted in a different voting precinct, that kind of thing. So
right.
they were not legal.
That very well may be. I mean, the paper just that was just initially.
Right.
That was just a quick flash in the.
Because I guarantee, if they find one person who's here from Mexico illegally and registered to vote, that person is going to become as famous as Willie Horton.
Oh, I agree. But that was again, that was their initial first just pass on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the what's interesting is the Secretary of State in Florida is refusing to stop purging the rolls.
Incredible. Well, you know, 385, that's you're halfway to what George Bush supposedly won Florida by in 2000. And that's just one county.
Exactly. Well, Valerie Espinosa, who's driving the car I'm in right now, has just told me that in Santa Fe they don't purge. They put them in sort of an inactive file, and then they can look at that more carefully.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. Some other things happening. The Supreme Court also, by the way, this is very bad news. They refused to hear Governor Siegelman's case. It means his appeal. It means he will probably go back to prison to finish most of his term. That may be as much as 6 more years.
You're kidding.
No.
Was
very upsetting.
So they didn't even grant cert? I mean, was this is the...
That's right. They did not even grant to hear the case.
Wow. I'm astounded. When did we learn this?
Today. Not a... 2 hours, you know, 3 hours ago, how many hours ago the Supreme Court let their decision go. They are, however, going to hear about a suspect who was detained and held while the police secured a search warrant. That they are going to hear. And they did also decline to hear 3 Blackwater guards who are on trial. They wanted to prevent the trial from going forth, they are accused of killing 17 people. But I cannot believe they refused to hear. That means 4 members of the court refused to hear that case.
Well, don't you have to just get four members of the court in order to hear a case, or do you have to have...
That's right. That's all you need is four, but that means they didn't get the four.
They didn't get the four, which means that seven members of the court said no, right?
It means, we don't know, but at least, yeah. Right, at least, exactly. Well, no, there's nine. So
oh, there's nine. I'm sorry, yeah. Right. So five or six members of the court said no.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Incredible. Incredible.
I mean, if
there was ever a case that was made for a Supreme Court overview, I'm just surprised that between Kagan, Sotomayor, what's his name, Breyer, and Kennedy's pretty unreliable. That's the problem. I'm just surprised they couldn't get four. I mean, anyway. That's very troubling. I mean, I know Don Siegelman, and he's a good man. And
you introduced me to Don Siegelman, and 100 attorney generals feel that he's been absolutely railroaded on.
Right, and a bunch of them were Republicans.
Exactly. Crazy. Completely crazy.
Yeah.
By the way, as you know, Governor Romney appointed Governor Mike Leavitt to his transition team to sort of head it up. As you know, he was at HHS. Well, now the right wing is going completely nuts because former Governor Leavitt runs a healthcare consulting firm supporting the Affordable Health Care Act and insurance exchanges. And places like Freedom Works, Red State, you know, right wing, all that stuff are going completely nuts on Romney on this one.
Wow. So is Romney going to stand up to them or is he going to back down?
Well, so far, they said that they are committed to him. This was Andrea Saul, and she's the spokesperson for Romney.
That's what they initially said about the gay guy that they had on their team, too.
That's what they initially said, and then they cowered. But he now has the nomination. And by the way, tomorrow we'll also talk a little bit about the California primary. Don't forget, tomorrow is also Wisconsin recall election. Clinton's been out there.
Yep.
So,
and in California, there's a really important tobacco tax to show up for and vote on.
Right, tobacco is the first time they're experimenting with the way that they are doing these various primaries. So
yeah.
Anyway, and I'll be talking to you tomorrow in New Mexico. Vote Val, as we said.
Super. Thank you. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Great. Thanks, Ellen. This Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the German Embassy, which wants you to know that Germany supports the European strategy to strengthen the euro through fiscal stability, solidarity, and growth. Learn more online at germany.info. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
In defense of super PACs? Of outside groups? Really? Jacob Solem of the Reason Foundation, Reason.com, and Reason Magazine, senior editor of Reason Magazine, nationally syndicated columnist. Jacob, welcome back to the program, first of all.
Thank you.
I don't get it. Why do you think that our politics are improved by people like the Koch brothers, who help fund your institute, pouring $300 million, I guess is the number that we're up to now, into defeating the President of the United States, two brothers?
Well, I think, you know, it doesn't have to be people like the Koch brothers. It can be anybody.
But it is.
That's the beauty of the First Amendment. Look, people like George Soros and Peter Lewis and John Sperling, who are, you know, much more to the left than the Koch brothers are.
They're not putting $300 million into this election.
No, but they can. The point is that they have that right. And, in fact, they've had it for years. Even before Citizens United, rich people could spend as much of their own money as they wanted on political messages. And in fact, the Supreme Court has said that to try to impose limits on that would be a violation of freedom of speech, which I think is correct. What Citizens United has done is that it's made it easier for people to pool their resources. So even people who aren't billionaires can now put their money together via either newly created groups or long-standing groups, advocacy groups like the NRA or the ACLU or Greenpeace, or even, you know, groups that support limits on campaign finance, spending or contributions. All of these groups, no matter what their perspective, what their ideology, are free to spend money on political messages, even if it's to urge the election or defeat of a particular candidate. And I think that's as it should be.
I may further say that I have not observed men's honesty to increase with their riches. Thomas Jefferson, 1800. this is something that Jefferson railed about. At some length, by the way, the possibility that rich people might end up swinging our democracy. The fact that they could be rich people on the left or rich people on the right is absolutely friggin' irrelevant. What you're arguing for is a form of aristocracy. You're saying, and I'm astounded to hear somebody who purports to be an objectivist or libertarian or anything remotely like that, saying that we should, well, actually, no, I guess this is perfectly consistent with libertarian philosophy, that the rich should run everything, and if you're not rich, screw you.
Well, that's not the way it works. It's not just rich people.
That's absolutely the way it works.
In fact, the advantage of having super PACs, so-called super PACs, or what you might call outside groups, or other advocacy groups that exist for a long time involved in the political process, is that you can get people who don't have that much money, but they can pool their resources. And, for example, they can advocate to defeat people who support the Patriot Act. They can advocate.
Oh, all of us poor people can get together and try and take on the $30 million that Scott Walker has raised out of state. You realize that, you know, even with the labor unions that you guys vilify so aggressively, you know, the total amount of money that the recall Walker, please let me finish this sentence, Jacob.
Yeah.
The total amount of money that the recall Walker people have raised is $4 million. Walker has gone to out-of-state billionaires, from the Koch brothers to oil billionaires down in Texas to Wall Street people in New York City, and raised over $30 million, more than any governor has ever raised in the history of this country for any kind of a recall election. And you're saying that is okay?
No, I'm saying it's okay because people from any side are free to collect money and spend money. Look, the unions are just as free as businesses are to spend money.
They shouldn't be.
United. Let me give you an example this helped advance a progressive issue, okay? There was a primary in Texas just last week where a relative newcomer who had been a city councilman in El Paso named Beto O'Rourke defeated a longstanding incumbent. Now, one of the interesting things about them is that the incumbent, Sylvester Reyes, is a really unreconstructed drug warrior, like about as hardline as
he is corrupt.
Imagine. He comes out of
he was corrupt
control.
And everybody knew it.
And
that's why he lost.
Rourke has written a book favoring drug legalization and has condemned the
that
war.
That was not the issue. Reyes was corrupt.
Well, that was one of the issues, but they also talked about drug policy in the campaign.
You know, what you're doing, you're trying to take a single example in general. You know, let me tell you about one guy who took arsenic and survived. I guess we should go back to putting arsenic in our water.
Well, look, the same group that helped O'Rourke in his campaign, the campaign for primary accountability, is going around the country, and they're targeting long-standing incumbents who've gotten complacent, possibly corrupt, possibly lazy, not really representing their constituents anymore, and they're targeting them regardless of party. They're targeting Republicans, and they're targeting Democrats. To me, this is a good thing. It shakes things up.
This is not a good thing. It is not a good thing to have the people. It is not a good thing to have the people with the most money have the greatest stick in our democracy. The fact of the matter is that retail politics is largely a thing of the past. Most political races are won based on television advertising, and television advertising is a function pure and simple of money. And I'm just astounded that anybody would say that it's a good thing for money to be the thing that decides politics. I'm horrified,
well,
Jacob. This is not just un-American. This is anti-American.
You still have to persuade people. We're still talking about speech. You're not bribing people.
Money is not speech.
You have to persuade people with your arguments. It is true that you need a certain amount of money.
If nobody can hear your argument, it doesn't matter.
Spending lots of money is not a guarantee of winning. Look at Carly Fiorina in California, and what's her name, the
Redwood
woman in Connecticut. They both spent huge amounts of money, and they lost by sizable margins. So clearly it's not just about spending the money. People have to be receptive to your message.
In 98% of political races in the United States, the person who spends the most money wins.
Well, the incumbents have tremendous advantages. They have over 90% re-election rate.
96% for incumbents, because they have more access to money.
Money or outside groups helps to defeat that advantage. I think that's a good thing. It shakes up the races.
In 98,
makes it more likely that somebody like Reyes can be thrown out.
In 98% of races, the person with the most money wins. You tell me that's not a corrupt system?
No, it's not a corrupt system because the money that they collect may be a reflection of their support. I mean, you're confusing correlation with causation. Just because they spend money and win doesn't mean
I am asserting
the money was the thing that made them win.
I am asserting causation.
But without evidence. The only evidence is the correlation. You're saying because the people who spend more money tend to win, then that must be because they're spending more money. But maybe they're spending more money because they're attracting more support, and that allows them to raise more money. And if anything, allowing outside groups and independent groups to participate in this process.
Please don't filibuster these things, Jacob. We have a limited, I'm not filibustering you. If you wouldn't filibuster me, I'd appreciate it. The fact of the matter is, though, that, that sounds nice in a perfect world. And it sounds nice where everybody has access to money. But if you've got the majority of Americans living, the mean income in the United States, the median income in the United States is $26,500. People who are earning that amount of money, which is more than half of all Americans, do not have the money to participate in politics to swing elections. And for you to say that the billionaires, the people who fund, right-wing think tanks and objectivist and libertarian think tanks and all this other kind of nonsense, or for that matter, George Soros, who's funding the Center for American Progress or whatever it is he's funding these days, funding left-wing things, that they should be able to swing elections just smacks to me of old-fashioned British aristocracy.
I'm not saying they should be able to swing elections. I'm saying they should be able to make their case just like anybody else can. It's always been a problem that some people have access to a bigger audience than other people. Look at newspapers, look at the TV networks, look at people with popular websites. Obviously, they reach a lot more people than others. Is that unfair? Should we try to equalize that and say, no, you reach too many people, you have to shut up now because you talk too much? I know that you think that about me, but
it's not what I'm suggesting. But I do think that we should ban television advertising for politics the same way we ban it for tobacco and let people make their cases like they did back, in the Nixon-Kennedy debates. But anyhow, Jacob Sullum, Reason.com. You can read all about it. The senior editor of Reason Magazine. Thank you, Jacob.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do we do about money in politics? Or as Jacob says, is it no problem at all? In fact, it's a good thing. What do you think? I've always been blown away. So what's the deal with rich people running our government, huh? I think it's a bad thing. Thomas Jefferson thought it was a bad thing. He says, a due horror of the evils which flow from these distinctions by birth or badge could be excited in Europe only, where the dignity of man is lost in arbitrary distinctions, where the human species is classed in several stages of degradation, and where the many are crushed under the weight of the few, and where the order represented can present to the contemplation of a thinking being no other picture than that of God Almighty and his angels trampling underfoot the host of the damned. Wow. He didn't like any kind of hierarchy. Charlie in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Charlie, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Great to be on your show. A lot of respect for you. Good show, man.
Thanks for calling. What's up?
Your guest that was just on, the editor for Reason Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Right near the end, he stated that something along the lines of that the poor rich people should have the same access to the message that everyone should have. And we were supposed to somehow feel sorry for them. I'm in that median income level along with the rest of America, and I have the same access to the message that everyone else does, and they should have the same access to the message that I do. I believe in publicly funded elections. I believe that, that they should not, our elections should not be up for sale.
Yep. I agree with you.
Publicly funded elections are the way to go, man.
I am totally with you, and so is Bernie Sanders. Totally with you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Liz in Valley Glen, California. Hey, Liz, what's up?
Hi, good morning. Or good afternoon, rather. I have a question for you. If all these senators and House of Representatives, congressmen, have pledged to Grover Norquist, isn't that a conflict with their pledge to enforce the Constitution? And shouldn't they be held as, not patriots, but, subverting the
not traitors.
Constitution?
I think it's political treason. I don't think it's legal treason. I think that what they're doing is they're saying that a multimillionaire lobbyist, that's Grover Norquist, that they are swearing loyalty to a multimillionaire lobbyist, and they are putting that above, as you correctly point out, their oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And what I find particularly interesting, and that is getting very little press, is that there are two people running for president of the United States right now from the major parties, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. One of those two people has signed Grover Norquist's pledge. That is Mitt Romney. And nobody is talking about that. Mitt Romney has sworn allegiance to a multimillionaire lobbyist. Barack Obama has not. And everybody should know it. Liz, thanks for raising the issue. Seth in Blacksburg, Virginia. Hey, Seth, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Good.
What's on your mind?
So I have something to share, which is very blissful.
Okay.
We are in a dark time. I mean, your show pretty much exemplifies all the hardships of our day. But there's something I wanted to share with you that comes from the Hopi that involves, the Hopi say that we're going through an inversion. They diagram an X, and we're going towards the center of the X, and on the other side of the X is a new beginning, what they call the Hopi Fifth World. And what I think is going to happen is we're going to come into a global renaissance. For the first time in world history, we're going to experience global culture in a unified fashion that's never been experienced before.
Well, you know, that one world, everybody thinks the same way, was promoted by a politician in the 1930s, and he said it would promote 1,000 years of peace. His name was Adolf Hitler.
Not everyone thinks the same way, but that we have respect and kind of a jubilee in experiencing our different cultures. I mean, we're doing that now.
I don't altogether disagree with you. Ravi Batra wrote a book called The New Golden Age, in which he said that, you know, we're going to have a horrible crash, and out of that is going to come an awakening. And
right.
I pretty much agree with that. I think
right.
It's going to get a lot worse before it gets better, and it'll get better as a consequence of it having gotten worse, and we'll learn our lessons finally.
And
I think, frankly, that happens every 80 years, and I think it takes, you know, about 80 years for the generation that remembers how we got screwed up and into the crash to
and
die off.
Yeah.
And so, but whether this is beyond the 80-year cycle and whether we're hitting a 500-year cycle, you know, you go back 500 years and you had the Enlightenment. You go back 500 years before that, you had the printing press. Well, actually, that was the printing press. You go back 500 years before that, and you had, the rise of, or the awakening of modern Islam with things like numbers and arts and sciences. And you go back
right.
500 years. Anyhow, there's these 500 year cycles. Whether that's happening, whether it's, you know, a multi thousand year cycle, I don't know. But I
but
do.
The point is that I really think that we are. I think we have a lot to look forward to. I think that we're in a really tough time. I mean, if you ask someone from the developing world how they're doing, they're probably like, well, really bad. But I think that we are tabulating, the left in particular, is tabulating every awful thing that is going on, and we're learning from it. We're saying, oh, capitalism is probably not unfettered, is probably not a good idea. And we know why.
Mm-hmm.
And we're calculating all of that, and consequently we're learning, and we're probably, you know, the future is probably not going to be capitalistic as a result.
Or at least not capitalistic in the way that we use the term today.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably we're probably going to change a lot of that.
Yeah.
Now, the internet is a tool that everybody uses, and we're learning that it's a very useful tool.
Yeah, although it is being scrubbed like crazy by right-wingers, it is just amazing to me how effectively they've taken control of everything from search engines to Wikipedia. Seth, thanks a lot for the call. I hope you are right. I suspect it's going to be a little more complicated than that, but I hope you're right. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Back with your calls and my thoughts, and could it be a new golden age coming? Right after this. Good, the bad, and the very, very emphysematously ugly, brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, food for your brain, the good. California State Assembly. While states like Florida are making it harder to vote, California is making it easier. Last Thursday, the Assembly passed AB 1436, which would remove restrictions on when Californians can register to vote. If the bill becomes law, it will allow citizens to register to vote at the polls on Election Day. Studies have shown that Election Day registration states and the District of Columbia, voter turnout rises by 7%. The right to vote is fundamental to our democracy. Kudos to California for standing up for it. The bad. Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper. Harper and the Canadian government are rewriting Canada's environmental laws to help the fossil fuel industry make even more money. Changes in the laws could speed up the extraction and export of Canada's oils, minerals, and other natural resources. Spokesman for Harper said, "The idea is simple and straightforward. Make Canada the most attractive country in the world for resource investment and development." Yet again, corporate money triumphs over the well-being of the environment. And the very, very ugly, Dr. Susan V. Borgia. Borgia and the hospital she works at are being sued by Juanjo Simonez, a gay New Jersey man. Borgia allegedly refused to give Simonez his HIV medications because the actions that had caused him to become infected were, quote, against God's will. Borgia also contacted Simonez's private physician and allegedly said to him, "You must be gay too if you're his doctor." If an HIV patient misses a dose of their medication, it can cause them to become resistant to the drugs and develop worse symptoms. Doctors are supposed to provide health care to patients regardless of their personal religious beliefs, which makes what Dr. Borgia did very, very ugly. That's mind-bogglingly ugly. I mean, that's incredibly mind-bogglingly ugly. Doug in Hamul, California. Hey, Doug, you want to disagree with me? What's up?
Hey, Tom, don't I always disagree with you?
It seems like it. What's
well,
on your mind?
Because you're on the wrong side of the issue about 67% of the time. If you get on the
so
other
are you,
side.
So are you calling, right? Doug, to say that having the best democracy someone can buy is a democracy, is a good thing?
No, I actually agree with you right there on that one. That's not what I'm calling for. But you're wrong about Florida purging their database. Now, that's legal under a Help America Vote Act of 2002. Unless you can specifically state what he is doing wrong or illegal under the National Voter Registration Act of 1993, he doesn't have to stop.
Right. Well, actually, under the Civil Rights Act, if you can, and the Voting Rights Act, if you can demonstrate that, regardless of intent, if you can demonstrate that the consequence of these actions that Rick Scott is taking fall disproportionately on people of color, then it is illegal. And that's what the Department of Justice is asserting right now. And that's where Rick Scott would be running afoul of the 15th Amendment, if that's the case.
He's not in violation of Section 5 of the Voter Rights Act of 1965. He's not in violation.
We shall see.
And he is doing exactly what he can do on the Help America Vote Act of 2002. That's what he's going to say.
Well, he's doing exactly what he can do, regardless of the legal smokescreen you want to try and blow over it. He's doing exactly what he can do to follow through on the strategy, the political strategy laid out for Republicans by the guy who founded the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, a fellow by the name of Paul Weyrich. And, Doug, he just, he, you know, he, here's Paul Weyrich telling you, exactly what the Republicans... This is back in 1980, talking to a bunch of Christian Republicans. Paul Weyrich established 32 years now? 32 years of Republican policy? Here is what he had to say.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
This is the founder of ALEC, which is the promoter, ALEC, the promoter of these laws that make it harder for you to vote. And, you know, in the same spirit as Rick Scott is trying to take people off the voting rolls. Maurice in Slidell, Louisiana, or Slidell, Louisiana. Oh, Maurice just vanished. Matt in Haydenfield, New Jersey. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm sure that you're familiar with the Anatole France quote. When you were talking earlier with the gentleman from Reason, it came to mind in sort of a reverse fashion. The original quote is, the law in its majestic equality forbids the rich as well as the poor to sleep under bridges, to beg in the streets, and to steal bread. And I sort of had an inverse pop into my head when you were talking with him, that the law in its majestic equality permits the rich as well as the poor to spend billions of dollars to express their views.
Yeah, good point. Excellent point. Matt, thank you very much. Well said. Elton in Lima, Ohio. Hey, Elton, thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. What's up?
Thank you, Tom. First, I'd like to say my appreciation that you bring on the other side and you treat them respectfully. I'd like to see Fox do that.
Okay.
The question I had was on your guest. The ratio of 96% of the times the person with the most money wins. What's the ratio regarding the percentage of times the person with the most donors wins, and how has Citizens United affected that?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know that there have been any statistics compiled on that, but that would be a really good one. You know, we do know that the Obama campaign, for example, has a broad base of small donors. The Romney campaign has a very small base of billionaires. The same could be said for Scott Walker and Tom Barrett. Scott Walker has, you know, raised $30 million from mostly billionaires, and Tom Barrett has raised $4 million from mostly, you know, individuals. But that's an excellent point. What is the donor ratio, not as what is the dollar ratio? I wish I'd thought of that during the debate. Thank you, Elton, for sharing that. Very, very insightful. Let's see here. Valerie in Saginaw, Michigan. Hey, Valerie, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Love your show.
Thank you. What's
up? The best thing on television.
Thank you.
Why can't the media go to Florida and film the voting process? I know they may not be able to take cameras inside of the voting area, but they can film and talk to people. Just tell everybody to show up.
Yeah,
show up.
That'll happen come November. But what they're doing right now in Florida is they're saying, oh, you registered to vote, we're going to take you off the registration list. And Florida doesn't have same day voter registration. So if you've been removed from the voter list and you show up to vote, you can't vote. You might be able to cast a provisional ballot, but it'll be thrown out because you're not a registered voter.
Maybe we need some purple thumbs.
Some purple thumbs. There you go. What can Iraq teach us of it? You're right. You're absolutely right. Thank you, Valerie. Thank you very much for the call.
I love your show.
Thank you. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. It's much appreciated. Cindy in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Hey, Cindy, what's up? Thanks for listening to Sirius.
Hey, thank you. You've got so many topics going on. I had already decided that I was going to help anybody who couldn't vote, maybe somebody older, somebody without a ride. It was going to be like the Adopt-a-Voter program.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up with the purging thing, and now I'm at a loss again.
Yeah.
I'm like just absolutely stuck. But my main question is, the guy earlier was talking about lie detector tests. And, of course, we can't do that, but can't they... Each venue at when they do the debates seems to be able to make up their own rules. Wouldn't it be great if there was a fact checker or a panel of fact checkers? Because so much stuff is just blatantly wrong.
Yeah.
And in advertising, as far as political advertising, why doesn't the truth in advertising affect them? Like, I can't tell you this new Chevy Malibu is only $20 if it's not.
Right.
But they can say anything on a political ad, whether it's true or not, and nobody says anything.
The reason for that is because the Supreme Court has ruled multiple times over two centuries, actually, that the right to free speech is most protected when it comes to political speech. It's less protected when it comes to commercial speech. So political speech, the most protected of all speech, includes lies. You know, part of the right to speak is the right to lie. And there are certain occasions when you can't lie, you know, if you're speaking to a grand jury, if you're under oath, things like that. But generally speaking, we all have the right to lie, and politicians certainly have the right to lie because of the Supreme Court decisions to that effect. There are countries where that's not the case. I'm not sure that I have a problem with politicians having the right to lie. I just have a problem with billionaires having the right to amplify those lies to the point that everybody believes them. That, I think, is the big problem. Thanks a lot for the call, Cindy. Jeff in Longmont, Colorado, a little less than a minute. Jeff, got a quick one?
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom. Hey, people might not realize how red Colorado really is. You know, we've got Lockheed Martin, we've got all these big defense contractors here, Cheyenne Mountain, and we have a Republican Secretary of State. And for everybody in Colorado, if you didn't vote in 2010 to save money, he is not sending out mail-in ballots to your address. I've been out registering people, or re-registering people, and it's just amazing what's going on. And when I come across an illegal alien, they say to me, "Oh, no, I don't vote. It's too much trouble." And
right.
Colorado has some pretty lax, actually, immigration laws because of the farms and whatnot. And this is, I mean, after all, Colorado.
Right.
Can't get much more Hispanic than that, can you?
Well, I guess not, but still, the illegal people who are here illegally are not going to be voting. You're right, Jeff. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And you can drop into our free live chat room over at TomHartman.com. Plus, check out our new iPhone app and iPad app over at the App Store and on TomHartman.com.
From the war against disorder.
Indeed, and if it does, it's going to come to the USA because people like Jill are getting out the vote. Jill in Ithaca, New York, welcome to the program. Jill?
Yeah, oh, sorry, Tom.
That's okay.
Anyway, yeah, I'm going to go on Amtrak tonight and go to Wisconsin.
Okay.
And, and there are websites people can look at in a computer, and actually they don't have to leave their homes. They can look, under Barrett, and I think it's 200,000 voters.
Mm-hmm.
That's the website. And they can actually check out a phone number that if they call, then the people at the other end will link them up onto how to call out from their homes to Wisconsin to the voters.
That's great. That's great.
Namaste. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you at first, but namaste.
Namaste, Jill. Thank you very much for your activism and for showing up and participating.
Hey, it's the only way to go.
There you go. Thank you very much. Jill, good luck and congratulations. Donna in Westminster, Colorado, listening on AM 760. Hey, Donna, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I saw when I was watching television, and I'm sorry, I don't remember which network it was, but the Fox is coming up with a Mundo Fox. It's the Spanish-speaking only network.
Right.
And I figure that's their way to attract the Spanish vote.
Yeah, it is. Are you talking about Fox News, as in the political mouthpiece for the Republican Party, or are you talking about Fox Network, the Dancing with the Stars network? Are they, are they expanding their commercial operations, or are they expanding their propaganda operation?
I'm not I can tell you the truth. I'm not sure because they're saying coming this summer.
Yeah.
But I figure, anything that, I know this is a bad assumption on me, but anything that's coming out of Fox.
Well, Rupert Murdoch owns them both. Yeah. I would probably leap to the same conclusions, but,
it just goes to what money can buy again here, Fox with all the money they have and,
Yep. That's just the point I wanted to make.
Okay, well said. Thank you very much, Donna. I appreciate the call. Gary in Port St. Lucie, Florida, watching on Free Speech TV. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom. It's an honor to speak to you. Listen, I want to discuss the political system a little bit. I was a little involved in Connecticut with an independent party in 94. What it is we have a two-party, one-party system. Most of the world, from what I understand, has a multi-party system with runoff elections. This, I think, would give us the average person more power with a runoff election. Now, the formula would be, in my opinion, for the presidential, no matter what the election was, even if one candidate got 90%, you'd still have to go to a runoff with the electoral formula.
Yeah, it's called instant runoff.
The system we're locked in right now, because I'm a little disappointed with Obama, to tell you the truth, because he talked about no tax breaks for the rich. He gave it to him.
Yeah.
He talked about this system we have for medical, but he cut out the part for the...
The public option. Actually, Gary, Obama didn't cut that out. The Republicans did. And you know, the two-party system, we've covered this at some length on this program in the past, but I'll say it again. There are seven democracies in the world that are older democracies that, you know, were established before John Stuart Mill in 1861 came up with the idea of proportional representation and wrote about it. And most democracies that came about after our Civil War are what's called proportional representation, or have what's called proportional representation, where if a party or a candidate gets, you know, 3% of the vote, they get 3% of the seats in parliament. In the United States, we have what's called first-past-the-post, winner-take-all elections, which virtually guarantees a two-party system, because if you have three parties, then somebody can win with 34% of the vote, and nobody's all enthusiastic about that. So third parties tend to die out fairly quickly, because they ultimately end up helping the party with which they are least closely aligned, which upsets the populace. So people tend not to ultimately support them. The way to get around that is to do what Australia has done, what New Zealand has done, and frankly what San Francisco has done, and hundreds of other communities across the United States, and that's come up with instant runoff voting, what you're talking about, which is, or ranked voting, I guess it's called in many countries. Or what New York State has had for, I think, over 100 years, which is fusion voting. You can declare yourself, you know, Jack Kennedy, his famous speech before the Progressive Party in New York, where he said, I am proud to be a liberal. If you voted for Jack Kennedy on the liberal ticket, you were voting for Jack Kennedy, even though whether he was running as a Democrat or liberal. So you can have fusion voting. So, you know, there's a lot of good possibilities out there. Dan in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I love your show.
Thank you.
My question for you is, are you predicting, or, I mean, do you think there could be another, like, a voting fiasco this time around because of Florida, you know, similar to what we had in 2000?
Yes.
Just with everything that's going on with this, what's the Democratic Party trying to do to fix this?
Well, the Democratic Party is yelling and screaming, and many Democrats are, and the news media is starting to, and people are starting to wake up to the fact that the same way that Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush threw 70,000 African Americans off the voting rolls in Florida in 2000 to pave the way so that Jeb Bush could hand that state to his brother George, the exact same thing is being done by Rick Scott on behalf of Mitt Romney. He's, you know, now Jeb had purged the African Americans, now Romney, Rick Scott is trying to purge largely Hispanics and also, you know, African-Americans and poor people and students. And it's just, this is no way to run an election. It's no way to run a country. It is not just un-American, it's anti-American. It's not just undemocratic, it's anti-democratic. It is, and if it isn't, it should be a crime in all probability if he's violated the Voter Rights Act. And frankly, I think that we should have a constitutional amendment that says that there is an absolute right, an absolute and inalienable right to vote in the United States, and that anything that is done that inhibits that right to vote is, you know, and get people, you know, you got a right to a gun, you don't have a right to vote. There's something fundamentally wrong with that. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman program, one of the latest on the Walker recall election in Wisconsin tomorrow, what you can do to help, plus one family's personal story about why labor rights are so important, and the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for We the People. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up, when you get out there and get active tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman.
For audio and video archives, go to TomHartmann.com.